Right. So we took a little bit of a break from our libertarianism part one. You are listening to Pillow Scream Radio. You're here with Alex, Jim, Mandy, and Mike. And now we're covering libertarianism part two on the books. Right now we're doing it. Everyone excited?
Libertarianism,
Okay. So last episode, we talked about how the word libertarian used to mean something completely different. It was actually for cool kids only. No 14-year-old Taekwondo champions. If you've ever carried a briefcase in middle school, nope, not a libertarian. Not allowed in the libertarian club. Get out of here.
I guess I have to leave
But
then.
apparently. I think we all do. We were all those kids at one point. Running to the cafeteria during lunch hour, so you could be the first in line for for pizza day or
I
whatever it
forgot
was.
about that population of kid. Holy shit. That was a thing.
Yeah, they were the ones that would do the Naruto run unironically, like through the hall.
I mean, there was this one kid who did it, and the only thing he had that he brought to school was this giant binder that was like a zippered
I
binder.
had one of those.
It
It
was
had
like,
like a little like shoulder strap.
like a trapper keeper.
Yeah, I'm not. It was like some blend of like multiple different document carrying instruments.
It was literally like they were living in a different reality than the rest of us. It was just fight for survival from day one, which explains why they all turned out to be libertarians, probably. The only thing they're concerned about is sustenance. All right. So the word libertarian got co-opted by a series of investment bankers and think tankers who decided that they actually wanted the term to be synonymous with anarcho-capitalism and not anarcho-communism. Alas, so it goes. What we didn't talk about last episode was anything about what libertarianism actually is and what they actually believe. So we're tackling that right now, right here in part two. So before we begin, does anyone have anything to say before we get into libertarianism, before we dive deep?
Let's do it. Let's do that dive. Let's do that DD.
Okay, so I have to let everyone in. I have to let everyone in on a little bit of a secret. Used to be a libertarian.
When did you stop?
I stopped about the same time I hit puberty, I think. I don't know if those two things are related, but they coincide in my head.
Well, that I felt good about you saying that until you said that you stopped when you hit puberty. And then I was like, well, I kept going after puberty. But I was a libertarian. I read Ayn Rand when I was 17, and it was like like Joseph Smith finding those things in his backyard in New York. I was like, oh my God, anyone else read this? And like the fucking community of libertarian weirdos that are all wearing sweater vests and mowing their own lawn. And they're like, yes, we have read it and we love it.
See, you keep saying things that are associated with libertarianism, and I feel attacked. Like, do you guys not have sweater vests? I have like three. And I've never been a libertarian.
I mean, maybe you're just trending that way. Maybe it's like full circle. It's an Ouroboros where, you kind of like separate and come back together in the middle, and all roads end at libertarianism at some point.
You don't need to live in the
Yeah, I
libertarian
mean,
closet, all right? You can be
I didn't even
yourself.
register to vote until like, I don't know, 2020, so.
That's very libertarian of you. Voting for Gary Johnson. All right. So that's why I feel so comfortable talking shit about li little libertarians is because I was one, right? We all grew out of it, obviously, as much as people really should. But unfortunately, a lot of people don't. I grew up listening to Rush Limbaugh and reading Ayn Rand, and any actual libertarian would be like, no, they're not real libertarians, blah, blah, blah. I was like, but they're part of like the culture. They're part of like the background, the edifice of libertarianism. They're the reason everyone knows what libertarianism is. It's because they made it super popular. Like you can't just deny Ayn Rand. She wouldn't even call herself a libertarian, but I don't give a shit. Be alive, then care. So, but that like gives you the kind of taste of the politics that I grew up believing. I had this like super weird mishmash of conservative views where it's like the state religion should be Christianity. But then it's also, I want to be able to do whatever I want and the government can't tell me otherwise kind of thing. None of it made any sense, even from an early age. So like you had to start shopping around for ideologies that fit the mold of whatever you already wanted to believe yourself. So it's going to sound like really fucking dumb, but I was legitimately in the marketplace of ideas, searching around for something that would allow me to keep believing everything that I wanted to keep believing, but would actually like give some kind of like intellectual rigor to it. And libertarianism ended up being the answer, right?
Confirmation bias.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like individual sovereignty. That sounds super awesome. Government can't interfere with whatever the hell I want to do. That sounds awesome. How do we pay for roads? I don't give a shit. We'll figure it out later. Like that kind of stuff.
Build them yourself.
Yeah, just do it yourself.
Selfishly.
Oh, God.
Like Ayn Rand says. It's so selfish you want to build a road for all of humanity. That's good.
As long as you can profit off of it, right? God. I'm just thinking of all the toll roads that exist in Texas.
It's getting so bad. Awful. It's getting so bad. These privatized roads.
Yeah. When in a normal, healthy society, you'll throw $10 on a train ticket and get across the country in a few hours. I have to spend $10 every fucking 50 meters on a toll road in Texas. All for a great road. And it's basically like... it's just basically a way for them to gatekeep poor people off of the roads so that there's less traffic.
Yeah.
That's just about the only
it's
way.
It's like paying a premium so you have no ads on your YouTube.
Yep. All right.
Interstate premium.
Yeah, exactly.
Your monthly trial is expiring.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're definitely going to have at some point a subscription service just for roads. And everyone's going to be like, oh, that's what taxes are. It's like, yeah, no shit. That's what taxes are. Doesn't make a difference if you're paying it towards a corporation or towards a government, except with the government, you actually have a say in, you know, the elected officials who are managing that complete apparatus, as opposed to some billionaire who will literally sell you and your family into slavery. I don't know why libertarians have such a big thing about voluntary slavery, but here we go. So... what I'd like to do for this episode is I want to go through the key concepts of libertarianism straight from the words of the Cato Institute. I'm reading off of an article by David Boaz. He's the executive vice president of the Cato Institute. And I just want to go top to bottom over these like 12 points that he has. And we'll just have an open discussion about these 12 points. He opens up the article by saying, the key concepts of libertarianism have developed over many centuries. The first inklings of them can be found in ancient China, Greece, and Israel. They began to be developed
Israel's
into something...
Israel's only been around since like the 40s.
yeah.
Jews
what,
are new.
What causes
they just,
them?
They just came out. Second generation Jews.
Sorry.
No, I mean, you're completely right. They definitely want a little bit of like that Western civilization, starting with like Greece, tinged with like the Christian centric call out to Israel. They throw in China there to make it seem like this is an international thing that anyone gives a shit about outside of like Texas.
Yeah, they're doing the thing where like they're trying to set it retroactively, anachronistically, like into history. So it sounds like it's all we've always been here. You know, it's like that if they can successfully make you believe that, then it's like, oh, it has legitimacy historically. And you're like, don't act like it's not.
Only stuff that's been around for a long time is good.
Yeah, if you're saying people want to be free, like, yeah, they like, since organisms have been being alive, they have not liked being fucked with. That's like a thing that is kind of common to it, but that's not a politically an interesting statement. But sorry, keep going.
Yeah, it's a I had a thought and then I completely lost it. All right. Anyways, move on. So the very first bullet point in David Boaz's The Cato Institute's concept of libertarianism is individualism. I think everyone can kind of see that right off the bat. Libertarians see the individual as the basic unit of social analysis. Only individuals make choices and are responsible for their actions. I have problems with this already. Only individuals. There are no other things that make choices or are responsible for actions. If you get two people in a room and they both make like a unified choice, that I guess that doesn't count. They're not responsible for that action. We can only analyze anything from the individual, the basic unit of analysis.
Yeah, what's that? The RICO thing? Like that method of prosecuting organized crime, where like the head of a crime family never actually does any crimes. He just tells other people to do them. You know, mm-hmm. It's like, hey, go take care of that guy, you know? And then like the new guy, the kid, just goes out and kills someone. And, oh, he got caught. He goes to jail. Like, oh, well, there's another kid. You know, the crime perpetuates itself. But that's just, I don't know. It's just that interesting little like the hyper focus on the individual, which is also, that's also not a historical thing. Like tribal communal identity is the prior and like fundamental perception of like how many animals do we know that just run around alone on their own?
Bears.
Some types of cats.
Really?
That might be it.
Yeah.
Bears.
Do bears really?
Yeah, bears. Well, I mean, bears even have like social units, small families, right? You always see like the mama bear with her little cubs wandering around. That would be a social unit yeah. greater than one.
There are scientific terms for like groups of pretty much every type of animal.
Oh, yeah. I love those. Animal group names. Those are like my favorite thing.
A shrewdness.
It's a grumble of pugs.
A grumble of pugs.
Yeah.
A flamboyance of flamingos.
A murder of crows. Murder.
Yeah, I like that one.
Yeah, there you go.
So it's so metal. Crows are so metal.
Yeah. It's almost like George R. R. Martin is writing all of these. Yeah, so the issue that I have, like individualism sounds great, right? Like on a very basic level, it appeals to the individual person because we're like, yeah, I'm me. I can only control me and that kind of stuff. That's only cropped up very recently because the social bonds that have basically fabricated the entire human race up until this point have been withered away by like hyper-capitalism in the past century or so, or the past like half century. For the entirety of the human race, we have been social creatures who maneuver, navigate, grow wealth, prosper in social groups, right? Like my wife's been watching this show called Alone on the History Channel, where they literally just drop you like into, they do like Siberia or something like that. They just drop you into Siberia and then whoever lasts the longest out of a group of like 10 people by themselves, they get like $500,000 or something like that. No one has made it to 100 days because usually around like day 30, day 45, they start going absolutely insane because isolation in that manner is not a healthy, natural state for the human brain. There are people who have set up cabins and they have like dams and they're catching fish every single day. They're like drying, salting fish that so they can have it like through the winter and everything. They are literally thriving out there and they all give up and leave because they don't have anyone else that they're around. There is no human society that can function as an individual unit of one. And any political theory that tries to kind of like force that singularity onto their entire ethos is bound to fail because the fundamental assumptions that you've made at the beginning are just not coherent with humanity in any single way. Okay, so because individuals are moral agents, they have a right to be secure in their life, liberty, and property. This is the second point, individual rights. These rights are not granted by government or by society. They are inherent in the nature of human beings. Let me hear your thoughts, because I have so many issues in just those two sentences right there.
It's just religious. That's all it sounds like to me. You know, like they're magical things. Yeah, I have ears. I have toes. You know, I don't know where the rights are that they're talking about. Like that's, I don't know.
Yeah, it's some kind of like externally verifiable like function of human existence that we have rights. Like what right does a human have over like a tiger that's about to eat him? Is there a right that exists there that I'm not aware of? Yeah, the Second Amendment rights.
I'm thinking about like libertarian in like a courtroom with a, like they hand him a doll or something and they're like, show me where he violated your rights, your right of free speech.
Is the government in the room with you right now? Okay, so these rights are not granted by government or by society. Where do they come from then?
God.
From God? I mean, we just talked like the faith-based thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But what rights does he grant? Did God grant us the right to firearms? He, she, Zim? did Zer grant us the right to firearms? Did he know that those existed when he laid down the Ten Commandments?
I mean, I know people that say yes. They got pictures of Moses carrying a, you know, Springfield musket. Those are always great.
But, well, yeah, he knew they would get it invented eventually.
Yeah. It is intuitively right, which is an easy way to say I don't have to or want to explain this at all. It is intuitively right that individuals enjoy the security of such rights. The burden of explanation should lie with those who would take rights away. Now, the issue that I take with a lot of libertarians is they only see rights as negative rights, right? You have this like presupposed layer of rights that every single human being comes with. Like, I have a right to, you know, not have my property stolen, to not be killed, to, I don't know, not be harassed or something like that. You have all these like basic rights, but they are only basic insofar as someone can take them away from you. There's no such thing as additive rights, positive rights, which say like I have a right to housing or a right to healthcare or a right to my firearms or a lawyer or anything like that. And every single one of them staunchly defend the Second Amendment. If you go ask them, do you believe you should have a right to a lawyer? All of them will say yes, but they don't recognize those as positive rights that have essentially been granted to us by collective agreement of, you know, the social contract that we're all supposedly a part of. Right? Rights exist more or less because we make them up. Someone woke up one day and was like, hey, I don't actually like it that the king can literally just chop my head off anytime he wants. There you go. You just generated a right for yourself. You believe now that you have the right to life, right?
Yeah.
That doesn't come naturally to anybody. You have to essentially construct a system that supports and advocates for those rights.
And asserts the rights at the point of force, like deterrent force if necessary. Like, that's the idea. The government structure is based on like collective agreement, not individual belief. So,
Yeah. And if we can create the right to not die at the hands of a king, then we can also create the right to healthcare. It is just as easy. We say it to be so, and we can make it so. Joe Biden could create a right to zero student debt tomorrow if he wanted to. He could. It'd be that easy. All he has to do is sign in the executive order. He could create the right to recreational marijuana across the United States if he wanted to tomorrow. But he chooses not to, because we have this like weird conception that the only rights that can be granted to us by the states are negative rights, ones that can only be taken away from us. Okay, the next one, spontaneous order. A great degree of order in society is necessary for individuals to survive and flourish. It's easy to assume that order must be imposed by a central authority the way we impose order on a stamp collection or a football team. All right. The most important institutions in human society, language, law, money, and markets, all developed spontaneously without central direction.
What are the four most important things?
Language, law, money, and markets.
Aren't two of those kind of the same thing?
What, money
and markets?
Money and markets? Yeah. I mean, okay.
I would have added some stuff to the most important things if I was only going to like list four.
Like, they're not, they didn't evolve like, I don't know, like stalactites or something. Like, they just, you know, it just, this happens. It's a natural phenomena. It's like, no, like someone, like everyone sat down and like wrote out a plan for these things, told people about them, got collective understanding about, you know, what you do with this green piece of green paper and what people value it as. Or what happens if you steal from someone, or what it means when I say fuck you, you know, that language. And like, all of that is like, I mean, language is probably the only one that's a natural, an actually natural phenomena, right? like in the sense that we say naturalism, it's like not specifically to humans.
Without coercion.
Yeah, yeah, without coercion. Yeah. Like, how? I don't see law, money, or markets happening outside of a governmental structure.
Law definitely didn't happen spontaneously.
No, that was Hammurabi's code. There's no way. Right? Like, a dude that was like, "I'll fucking pull your eye out, bitch." Like, that was what his law was. Like, I don't know what.
Yeah.
What, like, without coercion. Yeah. I don't know. Like, he's been.
Yeah, Hammurabi was literally. It was literally like a Phoenician king or something handed down the first law that, you know, we base the concept of law off of. Same thing with money. Like, dude just stamped his face on some metal and called it money. And that's the thing. Like, exchange of value from the very beginning, only enforced by a central authority who said, this is money and, you know, this is not money. This pile of feces you're handing me is not money. Fuck off. Kind of thing.
Yeah, it's like, sir, stop bringing your cows to try and trade for butter. Like, would that, I guess if you have a cow, you could make butter. Stop trying to trade your cows for wheat. It's like, it's annoying when you keep bringing your cow into my office. Just bring me gold coins.
And then markets. Markets are a recent phenomenon. The libertarians love to do the thing where it's like, capitalism has existed since one guy handed, you know, a pile of berries to another. It's like, no, that's barter, dude. Like, that's been around since humans have existed. Monkeys barter every now and then. Doesn't mean they have capitalism. But, like, the development of these markets over the past, what is it, like 200 years since mercantilism exists, only exists because more or less the government lost its monopoly on mercantilism, on the ability to charge people for moving shit across the ocean. I don't know if we can say that that developed spontaneously without central direction. It was almost very deliberately planned. Talk about the development of property with the enclosure of the commons and, you know, deed rights and all of that kind of stuff. Property basically only exists because government has a sense of, you own this, this person owns that. You have a deed, so you have this land. This guy has no deed, so he's fucked. You have personal property because you use it and it's in your house. You don't have this property because you don't use it and it's not in your house. Like, it belongs to that guy over there. Like, all of this is laid down in law somewhere. Oh my God. All right. Getting into law. The rule of law. Libertarianism is not libertinism or hedonism. It's not a claim that people can do anything they want to and nobody else can say anything.
Be a lot cooler if it was.
Right? Rather, libertarianism proposes a society of liberty under law in which individuals are free to pursue their own lives so as long as they respect the equal rights of others. Not saying anything too crazy. I also don't even know if it's worth writing down because it's like almost inarguable at this point. The rule of law means that individuals are governed by generally applicable and spontaneously developed legal rules, not by arbitrary commands. And that those rules should protect the freedom of individuals to pursue happiness in their own ways, not aim at any particular results or outcome. The issue that I have with this line is specifically individuals can pursue happiness in their own ways. Well, if you have a society that these libertarians love to go on about, then you have a society in which your only relation to your other man is via a market. And when markets exist, hierarchies naturally develop in terms of who owns property and who doesn't own property. So if you look at us nowadays, you either work or you starve. You die of exposure on some street in Chicago somewhere because you're not pursuing a profitable job of any sort. So the very idea that a libertarian society outputs pure individual freedom is false on its face. False on the fact that we have constructed this society and it does the exact opposite of everything that you're talking about.
He says not libertinism or hedonism.
Yes. Not libertinism. I don't know what that is.
It's like the Marquis de Sade, like sadism or whatever. Like, you can satisfy all worldly pleasures or something like that. I just...
Hedonism's like the pursuit of pleasure.
Yeah. Which is cool. I remember hedonism.
A libertine is one who's devoid of most moral principles.
Libertine is like a kind of... How do I say this? I only know this because of the musical The Music Man, and he described women as like libertine women, so they're just kind of like, I don't know, like slutty, like,
yeah, no, yeah, that was no my morals. Sense. It's just been slut shaming from the 1800s, basically.
Yeah.
Okay, no sluts.
It just sounds like, I guess, libertarian and libertine. They're not really that related, I don't think.
They know their audience, though.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, the problem with libertarianism, like, it's funny that they distance themselves from libertinism and hedonism. It's like, why, I mean, wouldn't libertinism and hedonism be included?
In individualism?
No, we're an ultra-moral society, right? As long as we have the right morals, then we can operate this completely fantastical social structure that we want to do, right?
And we all have the same morals.
Yes, we all have the same morals. It all works out.
It's like they're trying to reassure us that libertarians are virgins. That's what I'm hearing from
it. It's working.
Yeah. I don't know about you, but I didn't get laid until I stopped being a libertarian. So,
coincidence? Yeah. I think not.
Causal arrow flows one way.
Okay, next little bullet point they have. Limited government. To protect rights, individuals form governments. Sure, okay. Not like against this so far. But government is a dangerous institution. Oh, why? don't explain that whatsoever. Yeah.
I thought
to protect rights, individuals form governments, but they're dangerous. Like, okay.
Except only individuals are able to make choices. She already established that like a few lines ago.
Uh-huh. Yep. This all makes great sense.
Yeah, maybe the libertarians should go to the ungoverned Afghanistan if they think the governments are dangerous.
I mean, wouldn't they all just love Somalia, a completely stateless society? That is a great place to vacation, I heard.
Yeah, I'm moving there, and I'm going to pay for all of my child slaves with Bitcoin. It'd be great.
All right, let's see. Power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely.
This is fucking 12-year-old fucking logic. It's like, well, actually, you know, it's fucking, dude, the roller backpack thing keeps coming back to my mind. The power corrupts, like, it's just taken, like, if you Google image, like Wise quote, and, like, it comes up, and it's a picture of some fucking mountains or road, and just, like, letters on top of that image, and it says power corrupts. Yeah, exactly, one of those. And it just says shit like this, and you just construct, absent context or logical relationship between premises and an actual argument, it's just like some crank explaining why the world is not cool through his point of view. Like, that's all libertarianism is. It's because they got told they couldn't fucking smoke weed or whatever, but they still really think that poor people suck and they are tired of looking at homeless people. Like, that's they want to eat their cake and have it too. They want to eat their homeless people and get rid of them too.
Libertarians point to the historical fact, which I don't see a citation for, but let's go on, that it was the dispersion of power in Europe more than other parts of the world that led to individual liberty and sustained economic growth. What do we think about that line right there?
Europe was a fucking backwater. Like,
were they not like super feudal? Like, famously free Europe.
The reason, I mean, the major hypothesis about why Europe conquered the world or whatever, sustained economic growth, was that the immune systems were hyper resilient. Right? The guns, germs, and steel. Yeah, right? Well, they were so fucking dirty. They're so gross, just eating pig shit, like a bunch of fucking, hooligans for, I don't know, and that's probably about the time they invented soccer, too. And
bunch of goys.
Yeah, a bunch of goys. And they took their, and they would go, like, explore somewhere, like, fucking raft over to, you know, I don't know, North Africa, and diseases would wipe shit out, like in North America.
Yeah, I think it was a function of, there's a function of everyone moving towards cities, right? Like everyone got super crowded and cramped, and a whole bunch of diseases that are supposed to stay in pigs somehow got into humans. And then they dispersed all over the globe and fucked everything.
Yeah, like
that's a good, yeah, that's a good synopsis.
They had no, yeah, their again, their public works fucking sucked. Right? Rome had aqueducts and sewage, and they couldn't separate food from pig shit. Like that's what happened. That's why the population of Rome, after its decline, you know, like the population of Rome, like at its height, was like what, in the millions, and It no city in the world ever broke that, crested that record again until London in like 1850, right? Like, don't get out, get the fuck out of here with like Europe being like some super awesome place, because then just look at this, look at the population of China, like what China, actually, the Incas or the Mayans or something like that. The only thing they're missing was immune systems, and that was like a Achilles heel. Like, they can get the fuck out of here.
Evolutionary quirk. Yeah, the libertarians love to claim Rome as, one, it being a republic of any, like, real sort. They claim all the great parts of Rome, but then forget, like, the 1,000 years of just backwater history after they got their asses kicked by a couple of Germanic tribes. Like, forget all of that part. Highly resistant liberal society, which will be a quote for later. All right. Number whatever the fuck we're on. Free markets. To survive and to flourish, individuals need to engage in economic activity. Okay. The right to property entails the right to exchange property by mutual agreement. Now, there's this one sentence that we will just blow by, but the right to property is something that is assumed because we've been taught it from first grade, since we first learned how to, what a bill is and how to create a bill. But the right to property is actually something that is a fairly recent phenomenon in the course of human history. With the enclosure of the commons around, what is that, like the 1600s or so? Let me see. Let me get this right. Oh, no. Way earlier. It's 1066.
Yeah, I was going to say, weren't they already sailing across the ocean in like the 1400s?
With the Norman invasion?
Anyways, I'll forget that. Well, enclosure was a deliberate process back in the day for a king to distribute land to his feudal lords as compensation for them raising armies on his behalf. That was inscribed into law as a control mechanism for top man on the totem pole. He said, I have a right to this land because I have the most power. I have the divine right of kings, and I'll distribute it to you on in return for what is essentially labor. Now, free markets never actually broke that hierarchy in any meaningful sense. It still exists. The people who have the control over the thing, the means of production, which we've talked about before, enforce the hierarchy all the way down the chain by virtue of the fact that they have control over the thing. And that's about it, right? At no step did free markets free us of that central hierarchy that has existed since old William I invaded and conquered in England in 1066. All right. Next one, the virtue of production. Much of the impetus for libertarianism in the 17th century was a reaction against monarchs and aristocrats who lived off the productive labor of other people. Correct. Good job, guys. I'm so proud of you for noticing that. Instead, what we'd like to do is replace... Yeah, so fucking close, right? What we'd like to do is replace all the monarchs and aristocrats who live off the productive labor of other people with millionaires and billionaires who live off of the productive labor of other people. Jeff Bezos didn't get to $180 billion because he's 180 billion times more intelligent and hardworking than you. He did it because his assets appreciated on the backs of however many people labor for him. because he has the money. Anyways. Libertarians defended the right of people to keep the fruits of their labor, unless that the fruits of their labor are exploited by a capitalist class. This effort developed into a respect for the dignity of work and production, and especially for the growing middle class. And now we're just diving into straight Protestant, like, workaholism at this point. You can see the trend of kind of like this weird proto-Christian, but not really Christian work ethic kind of thing that they bake into everything that they do. Yep. Libertarians developed a pre-Marxist class analysis that divided society into two basic classes: those who produced wealth and those who took it by force from others. Ooh. They're so close, man. I wish I could just like push them over the edge. Thomas Paine, for instance, who I believe was like a socialist before socialists existed, before the term socialist existed. Mm-hmm. Thomas Paine wrote, "There are two distinct classes of men in the nation, those who pay taxes and those who receive and live upon the taxes."
Labor, and there's those that take it by force from others. And they think that the capitalist producing class, like the capitalists, are the ones that produce, right? And the people that take it are, yes, like the Mongols or something, right?
Or like the welfare queens or something. Yeah,
the
like
government.
That, or the politicians.
They think it's the government taking it and giving it to people, yeah, who don't produce it.
When it, yeah, and we're like, no, like the Willy Wonka quote or whatever. They're like, scratch that, reverse it, you know, whatever that one was.
We have to get on, we have to get on. We have so much time and so little to do. Strike that, reverse it. This way, please.
The people who, you know, actually are productive are the ones who, you know, work with their hands or their talents to create goods and services that we all use. Like the guy behind the counter at a McDonald's is the productive laborer. The person who's not the productive laborer in this sense would be, you know, the CEO who doesn't get paid a salary, but has however many tens of millions of dollars in stock options that are appreciating on the fact that he has 100,000 guys working on his behalf, creating actual goods and services down at the ground level. Libertarian sees that relationship inverse. They look at the CEO in the boardroom and they say, oh, he's actually the productive one. Completely ignoring the fact that if every CEO on this planet disappeared tomorrow, life would go on. We would still be producing the same goods and services. But if every single laborer, every single person who's flipping burgers at a McDonald's or sitting behind the counter at a gas station or is loading shit into trucks or is driving those trucks across the country, if all of those people disappeared, we would have World War III fucking tomorrow. Like, our entire society would implode. The very basis of like productive value in this country is off the backs of actual laborers, not the people who extract their wealth. Good job, libertarians. I'm glad you're really figuring this one out. Coming down to the last couple of bullet points here. The natural harmony of interests. Libertarians believe that there's a natural harmony of interests among peaceful, productive people in a just society.
Okay, they're just wrong now. Like, this is just getting ridiculous. Obviously, the CEO doesn't have the same interests as the person who's making it.
No two people have a harmony of interests. That's like,
well,
that's
they
where
said
this
in
whole
the first point that only
down.
Individuals make choices. So how can they all have a harmony of interests?
Yeah, like, isn't the point for, if we all had a harmony of interests, then it wouldn't be a problem if we just
to
had
have a
one
government.
Yeah.
We all want the same thing.
Yeah. But the whole point of libertarianism is to let people who don't agree with each other do whatever the fuck they want. With like a few limitations on like not killing each other or something.
Yeah.
Contradictory morons.
One person's individual plans, which may involve getting a job, starting a business, buying a house, which are all like economic actions and like very much structured by the society we built, may conflict with the plans of others who, I don't know, want to make art or not kill people or something like that. So the market makes many of us change our plans, but there's no coercion involved. Clearly, apparently. We all prosper from the operation of the free market, and there are no necessary conflicts between farmers and merchants, manufacturers and importers. Only when the government begins to hand out rewards on the basis of political pressure do we find ourselves involved in group conflict. push to organize and contend with other groups for a piece of political power. What a fascinating take on the course of human history. I wonder if even a single part of that is verifiably true. Like even like two or three of the whole words in the sentence could be verified as true. The
first thing that came out to my mind was like, there's no conflict of interest between like manufacturers and importers or whatever that was. Like,
yeah, isn't there almost deliberately a
between an employer and an employee or any people doing a transaction for something, right? It's like my goal is to pay you as little as possible for as much work as possible, right? And your goal is to get paid as much by me for as little work as possible. We are in direct conflict of interest. We just settle it by something other than the fucking bullet, you know? We settle it by being like, all right, fine, fuck it. We'll meet in the middle. Compromise. Like, you figure it out.
I thought you were parodying. Yeah. I didn't realize you were like reading the bullet point. Like, no, I thought you were just
that was the entire bullet point. I'm not that good, not yet.
It's the point in the show we don't know if it's like a hilarious hot take or an actual bullet point. We don't know.
That was a bullet point. The bullet point's title is Natural Harmony of Interests. We all prosper from the operation of the free market. Yeah, say that to every single person who's died because of lack of access to insulin. Like, yeah, we're all prospering off of the free market. We're all prospering because our access to healthcare makes complete sense right now. We're all prospering because, hurricane can hit landfall in Louisiana and all of the price for bottles of water are going to go up like 2,000% overnight. Like, that's prosperous. Yeah, we've really figured out a great way to manage these scarce resources. They really give the lie to the fact that none of this is predicated on any kind of like logical premises or like sociological predicament of any sort. It's just things that they wish to be true. And they've constructed this entire narrative around the things that they wish to be true. Lastly, peace. Libertarians have always battled the age-old scourge of war. And frankly, like, gotta give it to them. Most libertarians that are actually like believe what they preach are against war, and I'm proud of them for that. They understand that war brought great death and destruction on a grand scale, disrupted family and economic life, blah, 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 blah. Like, I almost don't give you points for that, because just about every like coherent ideology that trends towards the betterment of the human race is usually against war. That's like step number one, is how do you eliminate conflict between people?
Well, you don't have to if there is none.
Yeah, if we all have a natural harmony of interest, duh. I think the central issue that I have with libertarianism is it's all great to think about in theory, but the second you take this one individual actor and you add another individual actor into this fake society that they've created, it all falls apart. Imagine you just have man and a woman in the Garden of Eden, all natural resources abundant around them. There's no such thing as property or laws or anything like that. Very like proto early state. And Adam looks over at Eve and is like, that tree's mine. She's like, no, it's not. It's mine. Like, great. Now you've just created the conflict in which a third party needs to mediate. Libertarians would call this like the justice system or something like that. Now this third party isn't going to do it for free. He's like, well, the fuck am I going to waste my time arguing over this tree? So he's got to get paid somehow. But where's all the money come from to pay this jury that's going to mediate this dispute between the two people? It's like, oh, now you need fucking taxes to pay for it. Blam. We have three people in a society and your entire thing just fell apart in about two steps. Like, it's completely fantastic.
Yeah, it is. It reads like the one of those fantasy. So it's really more like Zoroastrian creation tales, you know, where it's like, you know, mm-hmm. There is the sun and there is the moon, there is land and there is water, you know, and they have these like dual approach, and it's simple. We understand.
They
that.
All lived in harmony until the Black Death of government emerged from the volcano.
Yeah, it all changed when the Fire Nation attacked. And they're fucking doesn't, it's just, it's like you said, fantastical. It's funny. I haven't seen it this way before. I always assumed it was just like argued in bad faith, like these people are just conservatives that want to smoke weed. But it's people who are seduced by a fantastic world because they don't understand the complex and really just like difficult, like kind of bleak world we do live in, right? They don't see the actual nature of it and really their own insignificance in it and their own vulnerability. Like those things are not parts of their story. They're not parts of their fantastic prologue here. So they stick with these like creation tales, like the
government always bad, yeah. The individual always good.
Yeah, like, and it's like that opening scene for Lord of the Rings where he cuts the ring off Sauron's finger or some shit, and it just doesn't sound like anything other than desperation and the deliberate pulling of wool over one's own eyes because the world is scary. So they want the world to be simpler, so they create reverse engineered a market creation theory that allows them to cope.
Yeah.
I think that's why it's like attractive to a lot of younger people.
Yeah.
Like you maybe haven't like had as much experience like actually interacting with other people or like having a job or doing anything.
Yeah.
Or interacting with any of these systems.
Yeah.
They just imagine it as like, oh, like it's so simple. Like, why is everybody just fucking it up? Like,
yeah. And they're also,
it's also have usually no health very problems. Privileged people.
Yes, privileged. Yeah. Young is a type of privilege as well for a variety of reasons. Like, you don't have any of the, you haven't had the experiences that make you feel vulnerable or fragile or insignificant or at risk, you know? So, like, the invincibility, the feeling of invincibility that every 18 to 20 year old has. It's why they'll drive fucking 98 miles an hour down school zones. The
speak for yourself. I didn't even have a license back then.
We got to do a biographical episode on you at some point. it's almost like the counter to the libertarian upbringing creation story. The only point I was making was like, yeah, the invincibility syndrome and the lack of experience. It seemed like fertile ground for libertarians. The same way that they would restrict healthcare from people who don't pay taxes. Without having been in a position where they don't make enough money to pay taxes or need healthcare. So they have no empathy for that situation. Which is why libertarianism is a psychopathic way to view the world. And it really... I think adult libertarians I do consider to be fucking psychopathic in some way. They're like, they're missing a critical lobe up there somewhere. But at root, like most libertarians that believe it and go to a conservative college or something and think that that's the answer, like that's just inexperience. It's just immaturity.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry for the noise. My stepdad's making hot pepper relish downstairs and canning it.
It sounds like he's...
Is he going to go barter it on the streets?
It sounds like he finished that and now he's using for target practice.
Meanwhile, we're trashing libertarianism over here and Mandy's living... Fuck me, I can't even talk. Mandy's living the libertarian dream. Firing shotgun rounds at... canned goods in the backyard.
Yeah, canning stuff.
Selling the remains.
Canning our freshly like grown vegetables that we grew outside. Yeah. Oh, like a homesteader. Take care of my livestock. Without internet. Yeah. I would like to be a homesteader. That's another thing. I think people get attracted to this because it sounds really cool. Like that you're just we're into women's rights, I guess, like individual freedom, into smoking weed, like homesteading. Really cool. I would love to do that. I can't wait to go move to South Dakota and just like live by myself and can stuff. But
I thought you were already doing that. Like you don't have internet and not a road in sight.
Yeah, I don't have internet. I mean, I have a cell phone though.
If I can't get memes on my homestead, then what was it all for?
I'll have to actually read books. It'll be terrible.
That's stacks of Ayn Rand novels just buried out in the wilderness. I can send you the coordinates.
For posterity.
Yeah. I think to kind of cap off just shitting on libertarians for two episodes, it's a juvenile ideology. It's predicated on some of like the most poorly formed historical analysis that anyone has frankly ever done in political discourse. And it sounds great until you think about it for about half a second. And you realize that these free markets aren't going to save us. They're not going to protect us from the impending ecological apocalypse. They aren't going to assert any rights on your behalf, a right to healthcare, a right to see a doctor, a right to smoke weed, a right to not be infringed upon by the police state, a right to any of these things. The free market is not going to save you from it. And if you can return back to the very foundations of humanity in terms of like a cooperative, like struggle for mutual survival, which has been the way of the human race from the very beginning, the ensuing ideology that you can construct from that foundation is a lot stronger and a lot more ideologically sound, and frankly, a lot more applicable to our everyday life in a way that libertarianism never will be. Don't let them get you. Don't let the bro vets come out and sell you coffee with a little bit of Ayn Rand on the side. Don't get out of the military and think that the free market is going to save you. The only thing that's going to save you is mutual struggle.
Oh my God, I thought of something. Future. I was listening to that guy, the Black Rifle guy, like on something, and he literally said that, you know, it was a situation where fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, you're not gonna get me again. And he wasn't kidding. Like, he said that seriously.
he unironically said circle. It. Oh my God.
Like the George Bush thing.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Oh, I love it. The George Bush thing is now the thing. Yeah. Like, he has supplanted the saying with his own version of it. And now no one can tell the difference.
Oh.
I love it.
We want to talk about where we're at with the show.
Yeah. Take us in, Betty.
Yeah. So, well, everyone, it's episode 33, right? And we all said this is a significant episode because it's how old Christ was when he died, you know? So,
are you sure Christ wasn't 28 like Kurt Cobain?
He was 27.
Oh, yeah. Shit, damn
Janis
it.
Janis Joplin. Damn it, we should have ended on 27.
Well, long story short, life's getting pretty hectic for just about all of us involved on the show right now. And we're concerned that we won't be able to produce good content if we attempt to produce content during the next few months. So in considering we were already talking about doing a rebrand and getting a new logo, maybe retitling the show, developing a new concept of the show in general, we figured we'd take this opportunity to put the show on a hiatus and for it to be the last episode of Pillow Scream Radio itself. So we'll go on that hiatus. This crew will stay together. We'll keep hanging out, having some meetings here and there, but probably mostly just watching movies in a group chat setting. And when we come back, it'll be under a different title with a different show. It'll be all four of us. And our hope is that life will settle down at that point sufficiently to allow us to produce the kind of content that you want to listen to and that you deserve to hear. So,
yeah, I don't want to speak on anyone's behalf, but I think Mandy put it perfectly when it's like, okay, Pillow Scream Radio is our angsty teenage years where we're just like yelling at people and just being frustrated and stuff. And it's fun, frankly. Like, I've had a phenomenal time just bullshitting with all four of us. But there's also other stuff out there that really excites us that we want to be able to dedicate our content to in terms of like getting people on board that are doing some really awesome things in terms of community organizing or economic democracy or any of those things that are really exciting and at least for me, kind of seem like a way out of this spiraling death trap that we're in. And focusing on something like that, I think, could be really inspiring for us as content producers and, frankly, for the people that like to listen to us. So I'm hopeful that through this hiatus, everyone will stick around, bear with us as we go through a little bit of rebranding and stuff, and then we come back strong and ready to go.
Yeah. I mean, like what always happens when you have a group of guy friends coming together, you add a chick in the mix, everything gets fucked up. So I apologize for coming in episode 10 and doing that, but on a serious note, yeah, it was really fun this past 20 something episodes. I'll be coming back probably with a new name, probably hotter, and ready to make a better show and have more fun.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to what's to come. I am currently talking with industry professionals and special guests and things like that that are experts in their field and will provide a lot of good information and knowledge and depth to our content. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot to be excited about. I want you to know that while these three are taking a break and taking care of their necessities, I'm going to be working hard to make this show the best it can be. And I'm really excited for what's to come in the future.
Oh, yeah.
Fuck yeah. That pumps me up.
Okay.